Once again, and welcome to the Music Review Database podcast with me, Chris. And today we've got Australian singer-songwriter and beatboxer DubFX with us. DubFX is pretty well known thanks to his very fluid and very eloquent style of beatboxing and rapping and singing. And he's been touring the world together with his girlfriend, the Flower Fairy, for a good amount of years now. He's got one album out, which is called Everything's a Ripple, and a live album called On the Streets of Europe. And yeah, we spoke with him about making a new album, what it's like to tour, and what's it like to be an independent artist, and what he's working on right now. So I hope you have a lot of fun listening to this. It was certainly a lot of fun to make this. See you on the other side. So could you introduce yourself to our readers and listeners who do not know you?
Okay, so I go by the name DubFX, and I basically create music live on the spot using a sampler and loads of effects pedals, which I use to manipulate the sound of my voice to layer sounds that I can then create music with.
And could you tell me a bit about your musical background? Did you grow up in a musical family, for instance?
Kind of, yeah. Look, my dad's got really good taste. My dad's not a music. Basically, my uncles and aunties are all into music on both sides of my family. My mum's, you know, she's a bit of an artistic lady herself. And my dad's not really very artistic at all, but he does respect art. He understands it and he likes it. He just doesn't create it in any way. He's more of a business mind. So I feel like I grew up with a lot of help from my uncles and aunties, a lot of inspiration and seeing them, and then also seeing my dad's sort of point of view, where he's got the potential to be an artist. It's just that he realized very early on that artists, you know, you can't survive being an artist. You know, they have to have some form of business mind, you know, in the world. So he kind of followed the business world, but I kind of applied his methodology of business to art. And so that's how I've managed to create what I've created, basically.
And when did you decide that you wanted to make music for a living?
Well, originally when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. Actually, first I wanted to be a dancer. That was the first thing I wanted to do when I was like 10 years old. I remembered dancing along to like all them, you know, little fucking, all those like electric, that sort of Euro house trash shit that was going on, like Scatman and, you know, Bebop, all that shit, and MC Hammer. I used to love all that stuff, and I wanted to dance like those hip hop dancers in those videos. And then as I got older, I used to dance a lot around the lounge room and the living room. My mum used to fucking always want me to teach her how I did those dances. I used to make them up and shit. And then I got into, like, I wanted to be an actor. I was always into performing arts, you know what I mean? And then I realized, when I went to school, my main thing was to be an actor. And I was just doing music on the side, but then I realized really quickly that all the actors pissed me off. They were just annoying people and insecure. And all the musicians were really cool and down to earth and fun to hang around with, and less ego than the actors. So I basically just started, I thought, well, fuck it, I'll just get into music. And at the same time, I was also doing really well at sport. I was always very physical. And I kind of had an opportunity to play football for a team that was sort of like, I don't know how that works with soccer in over there, but with Australian football over here, you know, you start off at a really minor level and then you get scouted higher teams, and then that you sort of get scouted along the way up. And I started getting scouted by a big team that's like a really big team in Victoria, where the state I'm in. And if you basically play for this football team, then you end up definitely going somewhere, you know what I mean? Like, if that's how it works. And I was to play with them, but I did one training session and I realized that all those people were dickheads as well. I didn't like the attitude, I didn't like the ego. So I was just like, I'm going to hang out with the musicians. At the time, it felt like a bit of a silly choice because it looked like I was going to go nowhere with it. I had all these other opportunities, but I still pursued the music because I knew that I just felt more at home with those kinds of people, basically.
And what made you decide that you wanted to make, the dubstep and the drum and bass and the hip-hop music specifically?
When I started out, I was playing punk rock when I was like 15, 16. That was just for enjoyment's sake. I was just playing I used to love bands like Green Day and The Offspring, Nirvana, Blink 182, believe it or not. I loved all that, American punk rock, skater music. And then I got into a band called Sublime, which got me into reggae. But at the same time, I was jamming with these musicians and they didn't like punk rock, or ska or reggae, they liked heavy metal. So I started playing in a heavy metal band. And then, that was really good for learning, understanding structure and how to create music, like how to record, because we were spending a lot of time in the studio, in our own home studios, and I learned a lot from that band, the metal band. But at the same time, I also had these other musicians that I used to jam with, which were all jazz musicians. And so that was really nice, having that contrast of, jamming completely free and never being able to play the same song twice. Whereas when I played with a metal band, every song had to be played exactly the same time every time, So having the non-structure mixed with the structure with two different bands. And then I started performing with a reggae band, another band. It was a hip-hop, a hip-hop funk band I used to play with. I used to jam with a lot of different bands around Melbourne. And I also started, and then towards the end, when I got to, that was for quite a few years. And then just before I went over to Europe for about a year and a half, I started jamming with a couple of DJs, doing, emceeing in clubs over breakbeat or over house music or electronic music, and that, because I really liked all that stuff as well. So I kind of immersed myself in as many styles and genres as possible, because I never believed that there was, one genre is better than the other. I just believe that there's good versions and the bad versions of every possible genre out there. It just comes down to how you do it and how you work with it. So I really immersed myself in all the different genres. And then when I got to the UK, I'd never heard of dubstep or drum and bass or jungle. And dubstep was very early on. That was just barely coming out. No one had really heard of that except for people in the UK. And I got to the UK and I was there. The material that I had with me that I was performing on the street was very folk, reggae kind of sound, sort of similar to Ben Harper or Jack Johnson, even like Jason as that kind of really poppy, very clean sound. And when I got to the UK, people hated that kind of style. They were just like, that's really shit. They told me straight up. And because I had no money and I was there to busk and I needed to make money, I was like, okay, well, what are they like? So I started listening to what they liked, and they were liking jungle and drum and bass, and it was all very bass music, bass driven. I never really thought much about, I always liked bass lines and drums, but I never thought about it being a leading instrument before, whereas in the UK, everything's very bassline driven. People like bass music, compared to, say, Holland and Germany, where it's more about, house music or techno, where it's all about the kick drum. Same with America. Americans love the kick drum, where especially hip hop and crunk and that kind of sound. Whereas the UK, if you listen to music, the UK music, there's not a lot of kick drum in it. I mean, there is a kick drum, but it's more about the bassline, So I basically was like, okay, that's what they want. They want bass lines. So I started busking and I kind of changed up my style there and then just for the public, because I kind of, adapted myself to that and I fell in love with the music. And I also met the Flower Fairy very early on. And she, as soon as I got to England, I met her. And she taught me all about liquid drum and bass, all the different genres of drum and bass that there is. Jungle, she taught me I didn't even know what the difference between jungle or drum and bass was at the time. She taught me that. She's took me to all these nights, which was like drum and dubstep nights and jump up nights and all these different things, and it got me really into it. So that was kind of how it started. That's how I sort of got into the genre, basically, that I do now.
And thanks to your music, you and the Flower Fairy have been able to travel all around the world and meet your fans in every country. And I'm just wondering, what's that like?
It's beautiful, I mean, it always surprises us because, as you know, we're not on the radio, we're not on the TV. The only place you can really find us is on the internet or on the street, if we're street performing. And so we don't know, you know, like we don't know how many fans we've got. I mean, we can look at Facebook, but you know, how many people watch one, how many people just watch one video and then like it without thinking about it? You know, lots of people do that. So, you know, the fact that we've got lots of, we've got 500, I've got like 50,000 Facebook fans, to me, that doesn't really mean anything, you know? I mean, it's like, sure, it's good, but that's because probably most of those people just saw one video on YouTube, liked the page, and then they don't think about it anymore, you know what I mean? But when we rock up to certain countries, like, especially in Europe, and Eastern Europe particularly, we have legions of fans who know every lyric and sing along and request songs and they go crazy for us, you know? And it's beautiful when we see that stuff, you know? When we go to, especially when we go to a country we've never been to before, and we realize we've got so many fans there, it's great.
And what has been your best moment performing under the name DubFX?
I think there's not really been one moment in particular. It's been the fact that, I guess I'd say that I'm proud of me and my missus, my flower fairy, that we stuck at it. You know, we could see, I've got an ability to be able to sort of see timelines, you know what I mean? It's something that I've always kind of been naturally good at, is being able to understand possibility, you know? Or if you want to take it to another level, sort of understanding the fifth dimension, right? Which is basically, the fourth dimension, which is possibility. It's not time, it's possibility. You know, knowing all the different outcomes and being able to, my brain, I kind of tend to live in a world where I'm constantly analyzing everything I do, everything I see, everybody I speak to, what everyone says. I can't help it. I just naturally analyze. So when I started street performing in England 5-6 years ago, I looked at how many CDs I was selling in 1 hour, and I looked at how much money I was making at that point, and I realized if I stuck at it for 5-6 years, I could probably buy a house. And, you know, I kind of calculated and I looked at the possibilities, and this is exactly what's happened. You know, now we own a house in Melbourne and Australia, and we've traveled around the world like 5 times over, and, you know, there's not been one moment. It's been the fact that we've been able to live the moment this entire time and been able to sort of create it as we go, you know?
And what can people expect to see when they come see you perform?
Obviously, we try our best to entertain the people there, but we also do it for ourselves. You know, like we change the way we do things depending on where we're performing. So if we're performing at a festival, you know, it can be a lot more colourful and fun and happy and joy, kind of joyful music with lots of always bass lines, always heavy beats, always lots of rapping and hip hop and lots of nostalgia. You know, we take nursery rhymes and we remix them, or we sing old covers in new ways of other people's music. Whereas when we're playing clubs, we tend to change it up and make things a bit darker and more deep and more dance worthy, you know, more club sort of vibes. And then on the street, it's more of a challenge for ourselves, because we're trying to stop people and we're trying to make people engage in what we're doing rather than just walk past. So that's the most challenging, and that's the best, my favorite. And we kind of experiment a lot and we can play around. So, you know, at the end of the day, people, you can't really expect to know what we're going to do, because we don't even know what we're going to do. We just kind of go with, we tap into what people are feeling in that moment and then do something around that. But obviously we're doing it for ourselves, you know. It's kind of hard to explain.
And when you look at your own discography, which track are you the most proud of?
I haven't written it yet.
So you're still searching for your magnum opus, as it were?
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever get there. I think to feel like you've achieved that, I mean, means you can quit, you know what I mean? And I don't see, If I achieve that moment, the only times I've ever really felt super proud about things is when I've collaborated with other people and I've been part of something that I couldn't have created on my own. You know, when that happens, that really pleases me, because sometimes when I set out to make a song in a certain way, in fact, every time I set out to make a song in a certain way, it doesn't turn out the way I expected in my head, right? Changes, it might not be as good, or it might be better sometimes, who knows. But when I perform, when I work with other people, I kind of don't worry as much about what I'm doing I just let whatever happened happen and let other people's minds come together. And in the end, I'm always really proud of what happens in those situations because it's something that I could never have achieved by myself, basically.
And who would you collaborate with, given the chance?
There are so many, man. There are so many people there. In particular, I like a lot of producers, like liquid drum and bass producers like Comix and Caliber, Newtone. I really like all those kind of producers. You know, but at the same time, I would love to meet any of the Marleys and collaborate on a song with any of them. Alba Rosie, I really like his, I like his work. You know, I've collaborated with a couple of people that were on my list, you know, like Charlie Tuna and Pete Philly. These were all big inspirations of mine. A band that I really would love to work with is Fat Freddy's Drop. They're probably my favorite band in the world.
And could you tell me what influences you?
Everyday life, man. Just things that happen, you know, in general. Like, I don't have there's no particular thing, anything that inspires me. It's like, you know, just, I listen a lot of music, man. I'm constantly listening to music. I can't do anything, any household chore without putting music on, you know, if it means folding the washing or doing the dishes or cooking food. I always have music on while I'm doing that stuff because it's constantly feeding me ideas. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people probably don't like to admit it, but, you know, everyone generally writes music is they listen to other people's music and they go, wow, I want to do a song just like that. And so they try and make a song just like it, but then obviously you put your own stamp on it and it comes out sounding different and it sounds like something you would write. Unless, of course, try to copy straight up. I don't do that. I listen to a song that I really like, and I don't ever listen to the vocals. I only ever listen to the drums and the bass and the chords. And then I sing my own things over the top of that beat, and then I'm like, wow, my lyrics or that melody sounds really good over this beat. I'm going to make a beat like that one. So I try and make a beat very similar to other people's work. And then obviously bits change and the structure changes. But then, and obviously once I put my vocals over the top, it starts sounding completely different again. So.
And still there's something about your music that when you just walk in the street or you're at a friend's home or something and somebody puts on a song, you can instantly recognize your style. You can instantly recognize a DubFX song, which I think is pretty incredible that you have your own unique sound.
Totally. I mean, that's something I always wished that I could achieve. I didn't realize it would happen like the way it did. I didn't expect it to happen. But I wasn't trying to do that. But, you know, when I was a kid and I was used to, you know, like instantly when you put on a Red Hot, when you listen or turn on the radio, you can tell straight away when it's a Red Hot Chili Peppers song or when it's, you know, whoever. You can just tell, you know, straight away from people. So, and there are particular people out there who have that, you know, an ability to do that. So I'm proud that I've managed to do that, if that's what you're saying.
So you've released one solo album, one album which was a collaboration, and a live album. And I want to know, is there a new album in the works?
Yeah, I've released a live album, I released a studio album, the Everything's a Ripple one. Then I did a Crossworlds with Sirius. And then I also produced an album for Flower Fairy, which it's mainly featuring, it's her singing on the album, but I still produced it and made all the music and helped write it with her and all of that. I'm actually about to start recording a new album, yeah, a new solo album. I've got about two or three more albums that I've in my mind that I've got. And then, I don't know, maybe I'll probably stop at three more, I think.
Just out of curiosity, why would you want to stop after that?
Because I'd feel like at this point I can't see myself. I can see three albums worth in my head. That's how far I can see ahead, right? If I achieve them and I don't have any more ideas, I don't want to repeat myself. There's no need. I don't want to keep writing the same songs over and over again, because that's just, people would just see through that and it's boring. And I wouldn't enjoy doing it. I would need to, unless something dramatic happened and my sound changed or I learned to sing in a different way or I was inspired by another new thing of genre of music, what am I capable of now? I can see three more albums, basically. But maybe that'll change.
And now it's time for my final question, and that's a question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, and that is, I want to know your stance on the whole debate on illegally downloading music and the music industry and your music specifically.
Well, personally, I'm all for it. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I download movies and I download music, and, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean that I don't pay for music or movies. I've got a big Blu-ray collection. You know, I'm a big fan of try before you buy. You know, that's something I recorded my first album all with cracked programs, you know, on my computer, and now I own those programs, and I don't use any cracks. I bought it all because, you know, I made money off using it, and now I own it all. And same with movies, and same with music. I own a lot of music. I buy stuff off iTunes or Bandcamp, or if I'm at a band at a club and I hear a band I like and they've got a CD for sale, I'll support that artist. But I don't go into CD shops and buy CDs in a shop. The only time I do that is when I'm buying records, like vinyl. Time I ever really go into a shop to buy music. I'm all for it, you know. I think, to be honest, the record labels are dying. I'm not against them totally, because at the end of the day, you know, I've got a lot of CDs in my collection which are by Sony, BMG, and, you know, Warner Music and all of that. Like, I've got lots of, you know, I've supported them for a long time as well. I mean, I don't have a hatred towards them. I don't like the fact that the music that they're putting out at the moment, but that's due to the fact that the industry is collapsing. You know, they can't afford these big record labels. All they care about is profit. They don't care about art. That's the whole reason why they're so big, right? And at the end of the day, so they're only ever going to invest their time and money into something that definitely gives them a profit return. And so they can't support artists like me, or even artists like Pete Philly, or, you know, we have to be on minor labels, you know, on smaller labels, because, and underground labels, and, you know, tech, and to be honest, I think it's kind of better at the end, you know. It's just the way the world's heading. I don't particularly have a stance. I just feel like, I think I'm just enjoying the fact that basically I managed to create, I don't know, I just managed to figure out a way to make money without having to use any record labels, completely independently off my music, without having to compromise any of my style, without having to compromise anything, you know what I mean? I've just been able to create a market for myself. And it only happened because I was out there fucking basically busting my balls for 4 or 5 years on the street performing as much as possible, performing whenever I possibly could, adapting to my situations, you know, changing, morphing, you know, being agile and flexible to whatever came my way. And, you know, paid off in the end. Now, you know, I own a house, and I'm happy with about everything I've done. So, you know, I don't really think about the record labels that much. I'm totally happy. If people download my music, that's fine. If they want to buy my music, that's fine too. I don't really care, you know. It's at the end of the day, enough people have downloaded my music and paid for it for me to be able to do what I'm doing, you know. I'm not one of the people that I wish that no one ever downloaded my music, because I download other people's music. I'd just be a hypocrite if I said that.
Well, thank you very much for this interview. We've burnt through my questions in record time, and I wish you the best of luck with all your future endeavors. And maybe someday we'll speak to you again.
All right, mate, take it easy. Submitted my consciousness with the focus of my mind. I've got to dig myself back to the beginning of eternally breaking free. Rest your head now, little girl.